Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Okay, let's go. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Jai Om Vishnupad. Paramahamsa. Parabhadakacharya, all stutanas, it's a she, Shrimad, his divine grace. Abhaya Charanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, ISKCON founder acharya, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Param se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Shidvaita Gadadha, Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Shri Shri, Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Mathuram Ki Jai Jagannath Swami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Srimati Lasi Devi Ki Jai Sambhaveda Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premananda. Hari Hari Bol. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve. Gauravani Pracharane Nivashesha Shunyavani Paschacha Jeshatarane. So we are at Govindakund right now. So we change that. We can go somewhere else if you like. Let us go by the side of Govardhan Hill. Now we are by the side of Govardhan Hill. Because that's kind of nice. Okay, so so Om Gana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So now we are going to this interesting scene. So now I'm just changing the scenes on this. Everybody's in a picture frame. So now we're going to go on to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there's one more scene change. This one's interesting. Okay. So we're going to go on to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're on the third chapter, the Majalila. And let's change this. Hold on. So we're on the third chapter of the Majalila, and we're going to start with text 99, and I'll fill you in on the details when we get there. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Okay, so we're on the 99th text of the third chapter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Majalila. So what we've been hearing about the last few days, the interactions between Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and especially Lord Nityananda, as they are taking prasadam. So just to reiterate a little bit, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has previously taken sannyas. Lord Nityananda tricked him. While Lord Chaitanya was trying to get to Vrindavan, Lord Nityananda tricked him to go to Shantipur, telling him that the Ganges River was the Yamuna, which wasn't completely a lie, because the Ganges and the Yamuna flowed together after the Triveni. So, and then Lord Chaitanya was shocked to arrive at Advaitacharya's house, and Advaitacharya is serving Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda with tons of prasadam, and Lord Chaitanya is complaining about it being too much, and Lord Nityananda is complaining about it being too little, and they're having some joking interactions between each other, and finally Lord Nityananda throws some of the rice on the floor, a few particles of the rice stick to the body of Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya starts dancing in ecstasy, and he says, "You have actually spoiled all my smarta regulations." So a smarta, as we described before, is one who's very much attached to the rules and regulations without knowing the purpose behind the rules and regulations, and even accepting many rules and regulations that have no bearing on the purpose. They're simply cultural rules and regulations. So that's what a smarta is. And that's one of the deviations from Krishna consciousness, when one becomes too attached to the rules and regulations. And we gave the example yesterday about one of my godbrothers who said he was going to stoop to my level to speak to me in English because he would love to have a conversation in Sanskrit. And actually, I do not know conversational Sanskrit, whereas this devotee knows conversational Sanskrit. And he was establishing his superiority, his smarta superiority, by telling me that he could speak to me in Sanskrit and I would not understand anything he was saying. That's a smarta. So we have to be very careful not to simply get attached to the rules and regulations without understanding the purpose behind them. In the Upadeshamrita, there is this statement about the things that deter us in our spiritual path. Achahara prayasas cha pajapa niyam agraha jana sangas chaloyam cha sadbir bhaktir vinashati. And that verse states the various things that stop our spiritual progress or deter us from making spiritual progress are collecting too much, or overeating, over-endeavoring for mundane things, prices ja, pujapa, talking nonsense, niyam agraha, not following the rules and regulations, or niyam agraha, that is following the rules and regulations, but as you're following the rules and regulations, not doing them for the right purpose. Okay. So I just erased something. Please don't use the annotation aspect of this because it actually will ruin the screen. People won't be able to see, and I'll have to erase it. You did it again. Don't use the annotation. Because then I just have to go into the eraser and erase it, which I just did. And okay. Okay, so let's continue. We'll have to. Okay. Nityananda Bale. E Krishna prasada iha ke juta kahile to me kaila aparada. Lord Nityananda is replying, these are the remnants of food left by Lord Krishna. If you take them to be ordinary remnants, you have committed an offense. In the Brihad Vishnu Purana is stated that one who considers Mahaprasadam to be equal to ordinary rice and dal certainly commits a great offense. Ordinary edibles are touchable and untouchable, but there are no such dualistic considerations where prasadam is concerned. Prasadam is transcendental and there are no transformations or contaminations. Just as there are no contaminations or transformations in the body of Lord Vishnu himself. Thus, even if one is a Brahman, he is certainly to be attacked by leprosy and bereft of all family members if he makes such dualistic considerations. Such an offender goes to hell, never to return. This is the injunction of the Brihad Vishnu Purana. Oh, wait, I have to turn off. Okay, that's it. I just turned off annotations. So in other words, personam is non-different from Krishna. The word personam means what? The mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if one takes prasadam, one is associating with Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that when he was tasting prasadam, it was like eating or tasting the saliva of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as I mentioned yesterday, when I was a young devotee, I had, and I still do, have such faith in prasadam, that after the Sunday feast, I would go around to the guest plates and eat what was left over. Prasadam is not contaminated in any way. And another point is really, really interesting about the other point is that prasadam, well, let's see, what was I going to say? Yeah, prasadam is never contaminated. And then during the Govardhan Puja, here's what I was going to say. During the Govardhan Puja ceremony, the residents of Vrindavan would throw prasadam at each other. And then they would pick up that prasadam from the ground and eat it. I remember we used to do that here during Govardhan Puja, and some people complained about it, so we didn't do it anymore. But we had such a good time, because this was actually the way the residents of Vrindavan would celebrate the Govardhan Puja. You know, just throwing prasadam and catching it and eating if some fell on the ground. Not that they would directly throw it on the ground, but if some fell on the ground, they would pick it up and eat it, because it's never contaminated. So Prabhupada was asked that question, should we simply take from someone else's plate when they have taken prasadam? And Prabhupada said, only if you have 100% faith in prasadam. So 100% faith. You know, sometimes we think that the injunctions that apply for absolutely pure devotees apply to us. And we were talking about that this morning. Just like there's this interesting statement in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that says that if one serves Krishna, then one has no obligations to anyone or anything else. So people take that, but it says if one serves Krishna 100% unalloyed without any other motivation, yes. That's the operative phrase. So if one has any other motivation, one needs to fulfill all other obligations too, to one's forefathers, to one's society, etc. Very important. And also, one should follow the rules and regulations of society, such as the law, common sense, ethics, morality, etc. Now, Lord Nityananda was an avaduta, so he wasn't obliged to do any of those things. We are not. An avaduta is one who is a paramahansa. Paramahansa means topmost swan-like person. In other words, even if a topmost swan-like person goes into a filthy place, he doesn't get affected by that filthy place. Whereas ourselves, those of us who are not situated on the absolute purest platform of devotional service, when we go somewhere, we do something, we're affected by the activity, we're affected by the persons, we're affected by the situation, we're affected by the time of day, we're affected by what we eat. We're affected by so many external factors. It's a fact. So many external factors we're affected by. So just like the other day, I was in a car that goes really fast. And so the really fast potential of the car affected me. And I went really fast. And I got a ticket. Krishna was showing me, you have to be transcendental. Mamchiyo bhyavacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati chaitan brahma uyaya kalpate. So you have to be so transcendental that even if you get in a car that can go 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds, you better not do it. You better not succumb to the temptation. And so, Prime Govinda very nicely gives us the verses that we're referring to. Mukunda offers shelter, all is not indebted to the, well, it's actually more of that. Okay, here we go. I won't read the Sanskrit. One who has given up all material duties, has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, whose offered shelter to all is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers who have passed away, since all such classes of living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. One who has surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord doesn't have any obligations. I know it's from the morning program. So, I spoke about it this morning. But you have to be absolutely surrendered. Don't use that as an excuse to cheat and be a rascal. And we should take care of ordinary things. Prabhupada said, actually it's mentioned in the Shastras, a Vaishnava is not neglectful in ordinary dealings. A Vaishnava doesn't like to take service from the Lord. A Vaishnava wants to render service to the Lord. For example, let's say we're scared about the virus. It's a good idea to be scared about the virus. Healthy fear is a good thing. So if we're scared, we want to prevent ourselves from getting the virus, what do? Well, obviously you pray to Krishna. Okay, that's one thing. But you also wear a mask, you rascal. You also observe social distancing, you rascal. You also wash your hands, you rascal. Why? You're saying, oh, Krishna's going to protect me. And look what happened when all those people went to the Kumbh Mela. And so many people, hundreds of thousands of people got the virus. And hundreds of thousands of people are dying. Even there was one chief minister in one state in India said the Ganges water will protect everyone from getting the virus. Well, guess what? It didn't happen. Everybody got the virus. Not everybody, of course, got the virus. And they are saying that the amount of people who got the virus is grossly underestimated. The amount of people who died because of the virus in India is grossly underestimated. And some people say it's underestimated by a factor of 20 to 25. So let's say 200,000, that's the official government statement, 200,000 people died. Let's see, official government statement. Okay, so let's multiply that by 20, conservative. Okay, very easy to multiply by 20. First you add a zero, then you get 2 million, and then you double it. Right? Mathematics, you can do that in my head. You get 4 million. And that's because people had political rallies, and that's because people went to these festivals like Kumbh Mela. Because the material energy acts in a certain way. Now, if you are Prahlad Maharaj, then you can challenge a demon like Hiranyakashipu. Yes, you can go up to Hiranyakashipu, who's the most powerful person in the universe, other than Krishna and Lord Brahma. And you can say, hey, Dad, I think it's good for you to take sannyas. You're chewing the chewed. You can do that. If you're on the level of Prahlad Maharaj. And then Lord Nrsimhadev will come and take care of everything or protect you. You know, you can be thrown off a cliff. You can be put in a cage of snakes, you'd be thrown into fire, you could be fed poison, sure. But are you Prahlad Maharaj? I don't think so. I don't think you're on the level of Prahlad Maharaj. Therefore, don't go up to Hiranyakashipu and challenge him. Don't go to a dangerous area in the city in the middle of the night and say, I have money. You know, you have to exercise precaution. Use the God-given brain that you have. And don't think that Krishna will protect you if you act like a fool. If you ignore common sense, if you ignore objective reality, if you ignore scientific facts, that's called cognitive dissonance. It is a mental disease. But if you're like Prahlad Maharaj, okay. Or if you're like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, you can eat a pat of butter every 3 days and survive. Can you imagine that? A pat of butter every 2 days, sleeping a half hour a night, or resting, sorry, a half hour a night and survive. If you do that, or try to do that, you will go crazy. Literally, you will go crazy. Prabhupada is our acharya. Prabhupada taught us how to act. Prabhupada got vaccines. Prabhupada took precautions. Prabhupada was intelligent. Prabhupada set the example for us. So, for those of you who like Prahlad Maharaj, this particular statement or statements I just made do not apply to you, because you are Mahabhagwats. Okay, sorry for that preaching. I thought it was very, very important. All right. Shateka sannyasi yare karaha bhojana tabe aparada vaibe kanjana. Srila Nityananda Prabhu continued, if you invite at least 100 sannyasis to your home and feed them sumptuously, your offense will be nullified. So Nityananda is joking with Advaitacharya, because Advaitacharya has been joking with him and calling each other all sorts of names. So Advaitacharya responds, Acharya kahe nakareva sannyasi mimanshana sannyasi nashila mora savasmita dharma. Advaitacharya replied, I shall never again invite another sannyasi, for it is a sannyasi who spoiled all my brahminical smriti regulations. So smriti regulations means all these different rules and regulations that don't help you advance in devotional service. So how do you know which ones to accept, which ones not to accept? Very easy. Just look at Prabhupada's example. So let's say you may think, I should undergo this austerity, do this ritual. But Prabhupada didn't do it. Prabhupada's acharya. Acharya means one who speaks nicely, one who acts nicely. Achar. Of course, speaking is called prachar. Behavior is called achar. So Prabhupada wanted us to do something, he would have done it. But he didn't. But do you think that you are more advanced, more austere than Srila Prabhupada is? Not a good idea. That means prideful. Once upon a time, there was a sannyasi. His name was Brahmananda Bharati. And he approached Lord Chaitanya. And he thought he was very austere by wearing deer skin. Because, you know, it is mentioned that generally a sannyasi should do things like that, or a vanaprastha should wear tree bark. Actually, Lord Ramchandra wore tree bark, or clothes made from tree bark, when he went to the forest, which is quite itchy. So, but Prabhupada didn't do that, and Lord Chaitanya didn't do that. So Lord Chaitanya said, when he saw Brahmananda Bharati wearing this deerskin, he said, yeah, I don't see Brahmananda Bharati. Brahmananda Bharati would never wear deerskin. Couldn't be him. So Brahmananda Bharti understood that sarcastic statement by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he changed his clothes and wore regular garb for a sannyasi at that particular time. So if something's good enough for Prabhupada, it's good enough for me. Of course, I don't imitate Prabhupada, but I understand that I'm not going to undergo any austerities that Srila Prabhupada did not do. On Ekadashi, Prabhupada did not fast completely. He took Ekadashi prasad. So I am following Prabhupada's footsteps. And if I do something that in my mind causes me to think that I am more austere than Prabhupada, then I am fallen. More austere than my guru, I am fallen. No matter how many austerities I may be taking, sleeping on a bed of nails, or fasting for a whole month, or eating like a duck. I won't describe what that means. Okay, next verse. Eta bali dwi jane karaila chamana utamash shayate lahiya karaila shayana. After this, Advaitacharya made the lords wash their hands and mouths. He then took them to a nice bed and made them lie down and take rest. Lavangaya lachibija utamarasavasa Tulasi Manjari Sahadila Mukavasa. She had Advaitacharya fed the two lords cloves and cardamom mixed with tulasi flowers. Thus there was a good fragrance within their mouths. Wow. Cloves are very important, actually for the teeth too. Sugandhi Chandane Lipta Kaila Kalevara Sugandhi Pushpa Mala Hani Dila Hridayo Para. She had waited up. Acharya then smeared the bodies of the lords with sandalwood pulp and then placed very fragrant flower garlands on their chests. Acharya Karite Chahi Pada Sambhana Sankuchitahana Prabhu Balena Bachana. When the Lord lay down on the bed, Advaitacharya waited to massage his legs, but the Lord was very hesitant and spoke to Advaitacharya. Spoke as follows to Advaitacharya. Bhutana chayale to me, charana chana, mukunda haridasa laya, varaha bhojana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Advaitacharya, you have made me dance in various ways. Now give up this practice, go with Mukunda and Haridas and accept your lunch. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here telling Advaitacharya that it is not befitting for a sannyasi to accept nice beds to lie on or to chew cloves and cardamom and have his body smeared with sandalwood pulp. Nor is it befitting for him to accept fragrant garlands and have his legs massaged by a pure Vaishnava. You have already made me dance according to your vow. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, now please stop it. You can go and take your lunch with Mukunda and Haridas. So actually, a sannyasi has many, 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 many restrictions. He's not supposed to have a nice bed to lie on. He's not supposed to enjoy his senses. He's not supposed to smear his body with sandalwood pulp. Lord Chaitanya allowed that with Advaitacharya. Now that's something else. Later on, when he was offered sandalwood oil by Jagannanda Pandit, he refused to accept it. And later on, when he was offered a nice bed, he refused to accept it in Jagannath Puri. So they just had to take banana leaves and tear them up and put them inside an old cloth that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said so he would have a softer place to lay down on. So these are the rules for sannyasis. Not to eat opulent food. Very, very important. Very, very important. Because one who eats opulent food, if he's not on a very high level of devotional service, his devotional service becomes spoiled because one becomes more lusty. Vatsya vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam udara pashta vegam. So one has to be very, very careful, because when you eat very opulent food, less very fatty food. Actually, Prabhupada described that eating fatty food makes you very lusty. Oh my God. Prabhupada was talking about the pigs, how they would eat very fatty food and they become very lusty. So, don't want to discourage any of you. Tabeta charya sange lana dvijane karilai chaya bojana yeyachila mane. Thereupon, Advaitacharya took prasadam with Mukunda and Haridasa, and they all wholeheartedly ate as much as they desired. Shantipurera lokashuni prabho rahagamana dekite aela loka prabhura charana. When the people of Shantipur heard that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying there, they all immediately came to see his lotus feet. Hari hari bolle loka anandita hanga chamatkara pulla prabhura sundariya dikina. Being very pleased, all the people loudly began to shout the holy name of the Lord. Hari hari. Indeed, they became struck with wonder upon seeing the beauty of the Lord. Gaur deha kanti surya jiniya ujvala arunavastra kanti tahe kare jalamala. They saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's very fair complexion, body, and its bright luster, which conquered the brilliance of the sun. Over and above this was the beauty of the saffron garments that glittered upon his body. Let me just check the Bengali right now. Huh. Yeah, Aruna Vastra Kanti. Ase ayalokaharshe nahi samadhana lokera sangate dina boila avasana. People came and went with great pleasure. There was no calculating how many people assembled there before the day was over. Sanjate acharya arambila sankirtana acharya nachena prabhu karena darashana or darshana. As soon as it was evening, Advaitacharya began the congregational chanting, even began to dance himself, and the Lord saw the performance. Nichananda Goshani Bhule Acharya Dhanina Uridasa Pache Nache Harashita Hina. When Advaitacharya began to dance, Nichananda Prabhu began dancing behind him. Haridas Thakur, being very pleased, also began dancing behind him. Ki kahiba re saki ajuka nanda hora chiradine madhava mandire mora. Advaitacharya said, "My dear friends, what shall I say? Today I have received the highest transcendental pleasure. After many, many days, Lord Krishna is in my house." This is a song composed by Vidyapati, who is a poet. Sometimes the word Madhava is misunderstood to refer to Madhavendra Puri. Advaitacharya was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and consequently some people think that he was referring to Madhavendra Puri by using the word Madhava. But actually, this is not the fact. This song was composed to commemorate the separation of Krishna from Radharani during Krishna's absence in Mathura. It is thought that this song was sung by Srimati Radharani when Krishna returned. It is technically called Mathura Viraha. That means the separation of Mathura. Epara Gaya Harshe Karena Nartana Sveda Kampa Pulakashru Hunkara Garjana. Advaitacharya led the Sankirtan party, and with great pleasure he sang this verse. There was a manifestation of ecstatic perspiration, shivering, raised hairs, tears in the eyes, and sometimes thundering and bellowing. Hiri, hiri, kabu prabora darena charana, charane dadia prabore balena vachana. While dancing, Advaitacharya would sometimes turn around and round and catch the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Advaitacharya would then speak to him as follows. Anekadina tumi more vidaila bandhya kareti punyachiri hebe rakiva bandhya. Advaitacharya would say, many days you have escaped me by bluffing. Now I have you in my home and I will keep you bound up. Hey, Balayacharya Nandi Karena Nartana Praharke Hare, Prahare Ka Ratri Acharya Kaila Sankirtana. So speaking, Advaitacharya performed congregational chanting with great pleasure for 3 hours that night and danced all the time. Premera Utkanta Prabhurana hi Krishna Sangha Virahi Vadila Prema Twalara Taranga. When Advaitacharya danced in that way, Lord Chaitanya felt ecstatic love for Krishna, and because of his separation, the waves and flames of love increased. Vyakula Handa Prabhu Bhumite Padila Goshani Dekhiya Acharya Riches Sambharila. Being agitated by the ecstasy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu suddenly fell to the ground. Seeing this, Advaitacharya stopped dancing. Prabhura Andara Mukunda Jani Balamate Bavera Sadrasha Pada Lagila Gaite. When Mukunda saw the ecstasy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, He understood the feelings of the Lord and began to sing many stanzas, augmenting the force of the Lord's ecstasy. Acharya Uthaila Prabhuke Karite Nartana Parashuni Prabhuranga Nayaya Dharana. Advaitacharya raised the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to help him dance. But the Lord, after hearing the stanzas sung by Mukunda, could not be held due to his bodily symptoms. Here are some of the bodily symptoms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and these are the... Some of them are Astashataka Bhavas, some of them are Anubhavas, and some of them are Sanchari Bhavas, or Vyabhachari Bhavas. Ashru Kampa Ulaka Sveda Gadgadavachana Shanei hute, shanei pate, shanei karodana. Tears fell from his eyes and his whole body trembled. His bodily hairs stood on end. He perspired heavily and his words faltered. Sometimes he stood and sometimes he fell. And sometimes he cried. So these are the symptoms of love. When one is madly in love, and for a pure devotee of the Lord, and of course for Lord Krishna when he's in the mood of his purest devotee, that is, Srimati Radharani, these symptoms are always there, although sometimes they're manifest, and sometimes they're not manifest, but they're always there. They're Sattva Bhava. I mean, they're part of the constitutional nature of a pure devotee. And sometimes they come out, and that's the Anubhavas, and these Sanchari Bhavas and the Sattvika Bhavas that manifest themselves. Okay. Ha ha prana priya saki kina haila more kanu prema vishe moratanu manajare mukunda sang. My dear intimate friend, what has not happened to me due to the effects of the poison of love for Krishna, my body and mind have been severely afflicted. So when Mukunda saw that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling ecstatic pain and manifesting ecstatic bodily symptoms, all due to feelings of separation from Krishna, he sang songs about Srimati Radharani's meeting with Krishna Advaita Acharya also stopped dancing. So we should understand all these different manifestations of ecstasy are manifested in a perverted way here in the material world. Everything that we have here is there in the spiritual realm in its original, pure, pristine state. There's even intoxication there in the spiritual world, as we mentioned several times before. Of course, you have Lord Balaram getting intoxicated, wanting the Varuni beverage. And he gets so intoxicated, he asks the Yamuna River to come close. And when she doesn't come close, he actually takes his plow and makes different rivulets come closer to him so he can go bathing in the Yamuna River. And then you have Krishna and the gopis sometimes taking intoxication, honey wine. And it's described in one pastime, and I forget where it is, that they were taking the honey wine, pouring it into glasses, and one person had the glass upside down, and she poured the honey wine on the stem or the bottom of the glass, and the honey wine went all over the place. So there's actually that intoxicating, there's madness in the spiritual world, because that's happiness. Just like in the material world, you experience intense emotions that give you joy, whether it's the emotion of love, lust, or whether it's the emotion of fear. That's why people go on roller coasters. I don't know if you know what a roller coaster is. But in the amusement park, they have these things, roller coasters, or they go to a horror house. When I was young, we went to different amusement parks, and I always liked the ride. They went through the horror house. They go on this, you sit on the seat, and the ride would take you through different scenarios where ghosts would jump out at you, or skeletons would jump at you, or some mummy would jump, not mommy, mummy, would jump out at you. And it was so joyful getting scared. It's interesting. Getting scared, or the thrill. When I was young, also we went skiing. And there's a thrill of going down the side of this of the mountains and everything rushing at you. And so there was like an adrenaline rush. So in the spiritual world, you have these symptoms, but not the perverted symptoms that we experience in the material world, but you have these symptoms in their original state, in their own relationship to the thrill of love of Krishna, to the fear of losing Krishna, to the anger with Krishna. Pretty interesting, isn't it? It's all related with Krishna, but every minute in the spiritual world is a thrill. Complete thrill. There's no boredom there here in the material world because it's so damn boring. We got to go places for a thrill. Like people wait till the summer vacation. Okay, the work is over, boring. What am I going to do for a thrill? Let's go to Disney World and get scared. Let's go to Disney World and get entertained. Let's go to a movie. So we can have some suspense, some thrill, because life is just boring, isn't it? You're thinking life is boring. In the spiritual world, ain't nothing boring. Everything is thrilling at every minute. Okay, so on that happy note, we went up to, let me just write this down. Oh, there goes my glasses. So, where is my pen? There it is. So we got up to text 124 today. 124, 99 to 24. So we know where to continue tomorrow. Okay, so Fiji Resort. Yeah, people go to Fiji Resort. Okay, so let's hold on a second. Let's let you unmute yourselves so you can ask a question. We got 39 people tonight. Okay, who has a question?
Hare Krishna, this is Rishikesh.
Rishikesh, sorry. You have a question?
Yes. I just want to understand, how do you differentiate between real faith and blind faith? How do you know whether you have a real faith or you're just following something whimsically, you know?
Well, real faith is based on reasoning and logic. In other words, you have to know why you're following what you're following. Whereas blind faith, you just do something without knowing what is the purpose of doing it. Just like, for example, we're chanting Hare Krishna. So we should know why we're chanting Hare Krishna, what mood to have while we're chanting Hare Krishna, what Hare Krishna is. And we should base that upon the proper epistemology. How do you know what you know? Like, why do we have faith? Or why do we know what we know about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? Well, we know this from the teachings of the great sages in disciplic succession. We know it from the Vedic literatures. So faith has to be based upon guru, shastra, and sadhu, first of all. And secondly, while we're doing something, we should be aware of why we're doing something and what it means. So these are all the qualities that are necessary to not have blind faith. That's a negative. These are all the qualities that are necessary to have firm faith. Sorry, that's a positive. While we're doing something. Like if you're doing something in Krishna consciousness and you don't know why you're doing it, where it comes from, or whether it's bona fide or not, then that's blind faith. Or if you believe in something just because someone told you it and you don't know why you should believe in it, that's blind faith. For example, most people follow certain religions because their parents taught them that. And you know, or follow certain rituals because their parents taught them those things. That's blind faith. So they should base their faith or belief, let's use the word belief, on guru, shastra, and sadhu. Those are the three checks and balances. Just like we chant Hare Krishna. How do we know what the Hare Krishna mantra means? We have the Chaitanya Charitamrita that informs us. We have the Bhagavatam that informs us. We have the disciplic succession, the devotees in disciplic succession that inform us. And we have the guru, and they all speak with the same voice. Therefore, we have faith in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And when we're chanting, we chant with faith, with understanding, not ritualistically. Chanting ritualistically is chanting without faith. So these are the prerequisites for having faith and not being blind. Yeah, we do a lot of things because it's blind following.
Blind so for day-to-day following. Affairs, we should really consult the general science or common sense, right?
I mean, yeah.
I cannot say
common sense, devotee, so I can... common sense, and we have to know the reason for doing things. Not only that the acharyas taught us, but what is the reason they're having us do this? I mean, for example, like Ekadashi, why do we follow Ekadashi? It's a good question. We follow Ekadashi because Krishna has ordained that it's a very special day for remembering him. So we increase our hearing and chanting on Ekadashi because you get more spiritual benefit on Ekadashi. And that's mentioned by the acharyas, that's mentioned by the Vedic literatures, that's mentioned by the guru. And that's why we follow Ekadashi, not just because it's a ritual that we do. So you have to know why you're doing what you're doing as you're doing it, and where it comes from, why it works. Why does the chanting of the holy name work? It works because it's non-different from Krishna. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddha Nitya Mukto Vinatvam Nama Namino. Krishna is non-different from his name. So we should be able to explain this to others. Otherwise, it appears to be like blind faith. And that's, of course, an epistemological question. Why do you believe what you believe? We should be able to answer that question. Why do you believe what you believe in? And ultimately, faith is reinforced by our experience. Krishna mentions this in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Raja Vijaraja Guyam Pavitramidam Utamam Pachaksha Bhagavam Dharmyam Shushukam Kartamavyam. This knowledge is the king of education, most secret of all secrets, because it gives direct experience by realization. In other words, you have direct experience, so that reinforces the faith. He says, chanting is an act not of blind faith, but of reasonable faith. Yes, because we have to understand why we chant, who or why the holy names work, where our source of information comes from. It's actually quite a complicated thing when you're dealing with the science of knowledge, which is called epistemology. You know, why do we believe in something? You know, why do you believe in something? You believe in something because the Vedic literatures, the Bhagavatam tells you this, the sages tell you this, and it's also your experience. That's pratyaksha. Pratyaksha is not considered a perfect methodology of understanding or knowing something. Pratyaksha means direct sensory experience because we have imperfect senses. Sometimes we can experience something that is not there, like a mirage. And sometimes we cannot experience something that is there. Like if there's fog in the air and you're driving your car, you're not going to see the obstacle in front of you. So you have imperfect senses, you have a tendency to make mistakes, you were certainly an illusion, and sometimes you do cheat yourself and others. So we accept our source of knowledge from perfect sources, such as the Vedic literatures. Just like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita is ascertaining that Krishna is the supreme. He says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Idam Uttamam. He says, you are the supreme abode. You are the supreme pure. And how do I know this about you? He gives some reference. He says, Ahus Tvam Rishiyak Sarve, Devar Shir Naradas Tata. I know this because Narada said this, Vyasa, Devala, all the great sages have said this. So that is one source of knowledge, and also the Vedic literatures say this. So how do we know Krishna's God? We have all these different methodologies of ascertaining that. So it's not just blind faith. Everything we do, we should know why we do what we do, and we should be able to give a shastric, spiritual, scientific explanation of why we do what we do. And we should be thinking of why we're doing something while we are doing it. Otherwise, it's blind faith. Even if you know why you're doing something, but if you're just doing it ritualistically, that's like blind faith too. How's that sound? Okay, so who has another question?
I have a question, Maharaj, if no one else has.
Mr. Govinda Maharaj.
Please accept my humble obeisances, all grace to Prabhupada.
What if I don't accept your humble obeisances?
Oh, then I'll go to hell. I'll suffer, Maharaj, and you'll get an email that I'm suffering.
All right.
Why don't if they have emails?
Well, if you go to hell, you'll actually see me there, so that'll be good.
No.
Have some good association. Never. All right, so what's your question?
Well, just curious question. Just before you ending, you explaining about Mukunda Datta specifying Mahaprabhu's mood. Yeah. I was wondering why Mukunda Datta was not spending time in Gambira with Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Rai. It's only 3.5, very secluded. How come Mukunda Datta knew his inner mood, but He's not counted one of them, or
yeah, just I guess you need to ask Mukunda Datta that. Actually, Lord Chaitanya had many intimate associates who understood his mood and reflected his mood, but they were not as close to him during the final years, for some reason or other, in Jagannath Puri. I mean, certainly even Advaitacharya knew the internal mood of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, Advaitacharya understood this. Lord Nityananda understood this. But of course, Lord Nityananda, being an, a manifestation, incarnation of Balaram, was in a little bit different mood in relationship to the gopis. Actually, it was interesting. I was just reading chapter 20 of the Gopal Champu, which deals with Balaram's. It's really interesting. Gopal Champu is the work by Jiva Goswami, dealing with Krishna and Balaram's pastimes in Vrindavan and outside Vrindavan, in Dwarka, etc., like that. So chapter 20 of the Gopal Champu, Jiva Goswami is talking about Balaram's going to Vrindavan to pacify the residents of Vrindavan to assure them that Krishna is just now coming. And it's described that Balaram, he had his own group of gopis. Jiva Goswami even describes, this is so interesting, that before Balaram had his interactions with his own group of gopis, he got permission from Nanda Baba and the other residents of Vrindavan to have that, to get married to them in Gandharva rite.
That I never heard.
I know. See? I'm revealing to you the inner truths revealed by Jiva Goswami. So of course, Jiva Goswami also really stresses the Swakya Bhav rather than the Parikya Bhav. Prabhupada comments on that. But in the Gopal Champu, he has Balaram getting permission from the elder residents of Vrindavan to basically have a relationship and have a Gandharva rite marriage with other.
I cannot hear you.
I know, I touched my microphone and turned it off by accident. I was in such ecstasy. That's what happens when you get me going. My hands go all over the place, and then I touch things that I shouldn't touch, like my microphone. Now it's on. So anyway, so a very interesting story, and if anyone's interested in the Gopal Champu, within the next month or two, hopefully, or 3 months, I'll be coming out with a complete narration of the Gopal Champu. I've done up to chapter 20 of the Uttarakhanda of the Gopal Champu so far. There's the Purva part, the Uttara part, and then there's the part where Krishna goes back to Vrindavan. Wow, this is really ecstatic. Anyway, but let me get back to the question. So Balaram, I have to address your question. So Nityananda's Balaram Hoila Nitai. So his relationship with Lord Chaitanya is not to remind Lord Chaitanya of the gopis. It's completely different. You don't find Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya talking about the gopis. Mm-hmm. At all. Because Lord Nityananda's associates are coward boys generally. And Lord Chaitanya's associates are gopis or Manjari gopis or stuff like that. So you got different moods of Lord Chaitanya's associates. For example, you have Murari Gupta. Lord Chaitanya never talked about the gopis with Murari Gupta. Because Murari Gupta is Hanuman. So each and every devotee had their specific mood in relationship to Lord Chaitanya. But Mukunda Datta, he understood about the mood of the gopis. In fact, Mukunda Datta was the one who introduced Gadadhar Pandit Goswami to Pundarik Vijayaniti, who was Vishabhanu. You know the story? No. Hmm. Gadadhar Pandit Goswami is Bishop Banu Nandini, Radharani. So he took initiation from Pundarik Vijayaniti, but when he first met Pundarik Vijayaniti, he was thinking Pundarik Vijayaniti was an ordinary materialistic person. And Mukunda Dutt revealed to Gadadhar Pandit Goswami the true nature of Pundarik Vijayaniti by chanting this beautiful verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna's mercy. Anyway, so the point is each and every disciple or devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had specific moods. That was the point I'm making right now. And some of them were compatible with the Madhurya Bhav, and some of them were compatible with Sakya Bhav, and some of them were compatible with Dasya Bhav or Vatsalya Bhav. You understand? But Mukunda Dutt, he was compatible with Madhurya Ras. Anyway, time to end.
It's Maharaj, confusing that his Gurudev, Rupa Goswami Pad, promote this Parakya.
Yes.
He wrote a whole book about it.
Parakya, yeah.
How is Jiva Goswami Pad, Prabhupada even mentioned in one purport in chapter Adilila, chapter 10, that Jiva Goswami Pad was accused with three things. Three points, that Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he was promoting Sakya. But my question is, like, it's confusing. It's like, how is possible Jiva Goswami Pad, unless...
Let me explain, because I only have 1 minute left. He was doing this, Prabhupada explained, because he had some immature followers who could not understand Parakya Bhav. However, all the gopis were ultimately married to Krishna, because during that 1 year where Lord Brahma stole away the coward boys on calves, right? You know the story? Yeah. Krishna took part of the coward boys and calves, and during that year they had the marriages.
Yes.
So Krishna actually did marry the gopis. So in one sense, Krishna was the one who was married to all the gopis. So it's not untrue. And secondly, all the so-called husbands of the gopis never even touched the gopis. Krishna was actually the only one who ever touched the gopis. That's another point. Another point is that Krishna stole the clothes from the gopis, the Vastraharana, right? And so by doing that, it signified that he was actually married to the gopis. So it's not wrong to say that Krishna had a swakya relationship with the gopis, because he was, in essence, married to the gopis. Plus, there were actually play marriages performed. One of them was performed by Lord Brahma between Krishna and Radharani. Right?
That's in Garga Samhita.
Yeah, that's in the Garga Samhita. So it's not wrong to say there's Swakya Bhav, although they played like it was Parikya Bhav. Hmm. So, I mean, it's not... These are the Lord's pastimes. Plus, another point, nobody... The gopis don't belong to anyone but Krishna. Nobody's wife belongs to them. If anyone is thinking that their wife is their property, that's illicit relationship on a higher spiritual platform. You understand?
Yes.
Because actually,
yes.
Isha Basham Idam Sarvam Yatkancha Jagacham Jagat. Okay, I got to end. Okay, thank you for your questions. See everybody later. Tomorrow, all glorious through divine grace.